Okay. Right. Good evening, and welcome to Cabinet on this Thursday evening, 17th of January, 2019. To start off with, I'm just going to say that this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. In addition, under the Local Authorities Executive Arrangements, Meetings and Access to Information England Regulations 2012, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any such images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. So to start off with, item one, which is apologies. We have apologies from Councillor Harper-Davis and also Councillor Vardy. And otherwise, I think we're all here. So item two, disclosure of pecuniary and personal interest. Does anyone have any disclosures they wish to make? Nope. Okay, that's great. Thank you. Item three, leaders' announcements. I have no announcements for this evening, which leads on to item four, which is the minutes of the previous meeting. There are two sets of minutes for the 13th of December 2018. One is to do with the main meeting and one is to do the exempt item at the end of the meeting. Is everyone happy with the accuracy and the content of those minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Just to double-check, all those in favour? Great, that's fantastic. Well, I've signed those off and handed those to Laura. Item five, questions under Cabinet Procedure 10.7. No questions have been submitted. So that leads us on to the first of the main items for this evening's meeting, which is item number six, which is the Capital Programme Underspend Recommendations of the Audit Committee. And with this, I'd like to invite Mr. Angel, who's our Independent Chair of Audit Committee, to the table. Welcome. I think this is the first time that you've actually appeared in front of Cabinet, so hopefully we're not too terrifying. So by all means, please take a seat. And what I'm going to do is ask Councillor Barclay to introduce the item. Adrian Ward, who's our Head of Strategic Support, will then present his report. And then if I can ask you, Mr. Angel, to present the panel's recommendations, and then we'll ask you any questions that we have on your report. Over to Councillor Barclay.
Thank you, Leader. This is a report due to concerns raised by the Audit Committee on the level of expenditure against the budget, capital plan budget for the General Fund and the Housing Revenue Account. The report that came to the Audit Committee was up to the end of October. You will see the report shows that we've done a complete analysis of what's happened, and £323,000 has been reduced from the General Fund Capital Plan, and a breakdown of the reduction is given. Some of the reasons why we've reduced the Capital Plan is the money for allocated for Loughborough University Science and Enterprise Park is not necessary at the moment, or the money for the super fast broadband. So the revised budget at the end of November was therefore £4,990,000, of which £2,013 was two. Yes, thank you, Chief Executive. He's quite right. It's not 2013. It's 2 million, or else it would be even worse than the Audit Committee thought, which would be a bit upsetting. Thus, 85% of the budget, the profile budget, has been spent, which it compares quite favourably to that at the end of October. Now, as far as the general budget's concerned, there's those directly delivered schemes where we are totally responsible, and we can do that. And at the end of November, 85% of that was spent. There's also the indirectly delivered schemes, which are schemes that the council either passports the money on to a third party or individual and organisation. And these schemes will include disabilities facilities grants and Section 106 funded facilities. There's a breakdown of the percentage of the budget spent as at the end of November, and the profiling shows that 100% of the directly delivered schemes which we have complete, you know, which we have control over, have been delivered, and 56% on the indirectly delivered schemes which we have no control over. So that's that. As far as the review of the HRA is concerned, we have now two parts to the HRA. There's the property acquisition funds and the improvements and enhancements to the housing stock. As far as the property acquisitions are concerned, we've actually done rather well, and we spent 228% of the profile budget as at the end of November, but don't alarm yourself, we still have enough money to cover that, and as a percentage of the year-end budget, we spent 60%. It is a different story on the improvements and enhancement to the HRA, and I think that's probably where the audit committee has come up trumps. The others I'm satisfied with that we are doing. What can we do with the improvement of the HRA assets into the housing stock? Well, the reality of it is we are reliant, we have the money, we are reliant on Fortem to do the work and do it quickly. They haven't been doing it as quickly, and that's what has caused the problem. That said, a significant volume of work has been completed, about £1.7 million worth to the end of December. However, there is a valid issue raised there, which has been highlighted by the audit report. But to be frank, we were very aware of that anyhow. It is not something that we have control over. We're negotiating with Fortem. The head of housing has actually pointed it out. So the forecasting for the full year, the forecast assumes full year spend of indirectly delivered schemes, and we are forecasting that we will, the overall 84% of the budget to be spent. Any money that isn't spent will be carried forward and spent later. We're not going to lose any money. The reason we have the capital plan is to plan out what we're going to do. We should be spending it. We are on the general fund. On the HRA, we know the reasons why we're not spending it. And we are recommended to continue to review the capital fund, as we always have done, and will continue to do. But what I would say is that worthwhile piece of work by the audit committee. I think their fears were somewhat misplaced. When we have a look at it and we look at the profile budget, it is a completely different story, but worthwhile. Now, I'll hand over to Mr. Angel, who's our independent... Adrian, sorry. Your moment in the sun, Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Councillor Barclay. Very briefly, a summary of the procedural process behind the report that's in front of you this evening. The Audit Committee received the mid-year Treasury Management Monitoring Report as part of their ongoing oversight of the Council's financial management arrangements. Where the Audit Committee have concerns about any matter that they consider, constitutionally they have a right to report those concerns onward to full Council, to Cabinet, or to the appropriate committee. The report before you tonight is reporting a concern that they had arising from their consideration of the Treasury Management Review Report. The report is in my name because I'm the lead officer for the Audit Committee, but the recommendation of the Audit Committee and the reason as set out on the first page of the report are what the committee asked to be put forward to you tonight, and that's really all I wanted to say, Leader.
Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Angel, yes, if you can push a button, and if you'd like to present your report.
First of all, can I thank you for inviting me to attend this evening? I much appreciate it. The concerns that we had at the Audit Committee back in November were based on figures of the 6 months' delivery of the capital programme, and compared to the previous year, it was significantly down. The first 6 months this year had spent about £1.6 million. Last year, £2.9 million had been spent. And I'm also conscious from the statement of accounts that the capital programme underspent by some £2 million last year. We're also conscious that if we didn't do anything at this stage, the next opportunity the Audit Committee would have to look at things would be in February, which would be too late to turn the ship round if things still weren't going to plan. So the appropriate action we felt was to bring it to Cabinet and to lead members to take a steer as to where we go from here.
button. Fantastic. Sorry, we're not a particularly automated system here in Charnwood. We're relying on thumbs and memories. What I'll do now is actually ask if anyone has any questions to ask you. But I'm going to open up with one question, which really leads on from Councillor Barclay's presentation and also understanding, obviously, from Adrian Ward's procedures of the process. So it appears that from obviously your report, the period that you looked at, that there had been a sort of underspend compared to previous years and also in relation to the budget. And subsequently, in the following month or two, the spend had actually obviously gone up. Have you had a chance to actually see the revised figures provided by the finance team?
Yes, I have. I'm quite impressed with the information that's been provided in the report, together with the detailed explanations on a scheme-by-scheme basis. And that's given us a lot of reassurance. But I think in the end, if you look at the end result, some £2 million has been taken out of this year's capital programme. The projections, I think, which are outlined on page 24, show the programme's been dropped down now from 12.4 million to some 10.4 million. We just hope that can be achieved. And the implications of it not being achieved is that schemes you expected to be delivered are not going to be delivered or are going to be delayed.
Now, can I open up for any other questions, if anyone wishes to have any questions of clarity or information? Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Leader. Just to go back to actually what the committee recommendations are, that they're asking the Cabinet to respond to provide assurances that the programme would be significantly delivered before the end of the financial year. And what, from what I've heard from Tom, that is confirmed, that we are given the assurances that that will be delivered before the end of the financial year. So just to confirm that, please.
That is the case. The things that we have control over, we will. I think there will be an underspend on the HRA housing stock capital plan, but that has been highlighted. We really, it isn't something we have, as I've said, where we have the money, we want to spend it, we just got to get the people to do the work. It's as simple as that. But there are assumptions within there that the schemes, as far as the forecast assumes for the general fund, the indirectly delivered schemes, such as Section 106, which can have the budget carried forward, the majority of them will be done. But yes, I think there's an assurance on the general fund. As far as the profiling of where we should be spent at the end of November and what we're forecasting for the end of the year, we should do it, but as we always do, we will review it. I think the major problem the report has highlighted is the underspend on the HRA housing adaptations, not so much the property acquisitions, that's fine. And we're aware of that. In fact, in honesty, we were well aware of it before the report came forward, but it is the job of the Audit Committee to do exactly what they've done, and I'm more than happy they have. In fact, I'm very glad they have.
Okay. So at the moment, we're still on questions of clarity. So are there any other further questions of clarity to Mr. Angel? No. In that case, thank you very much for that. You're now free to go. Very, very kind of you to come this evening. And again, also to Mrs. Angel as well, thank you very much for coming. It's always nice to have visitors in our gallery, even if they've been coerced to actually come. But thank you very much. And by all means, you're welcome to actually stay for the rest of the meeting, but I could quite understand if you wish to depart where you can. But thank you very much again for coming and presenting to this evening. We're going to now just have a bit more conversation. So by all means, on this item, so by all means, please stay for that. But if you'd like to return to your seat, that would be fantastic.
Could I just say one final thing through you? Could the officers who prepared the report be thanked for the work that they put into it? A lot of detailed information has been provided, which should be useful for the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much as well. I think we found it a very useful exercise. I'm going to ask now Simon Jackson, as our strategic director for this service, to ask whether there's actually any other points that you wish to add or whether there are any other questions that need to be made. And in particular, I know we have two recommendations and really just your advice in relation to those two particular recommendations.
Thank you, Leader. I would have to say to start with that Councillor Barclay has covered the vast majority of material in this report, so thank you to him for that. There's probably just a couple of things about the report I would add. So really a reiteration rather than anything new, but the first table in the report, which is on page 14 of your papers, just talks about the changes in the capital plan that's been put forward through the capital plan mid-year review, and then the sort of couple of lines below that table, which talks about the review and amendment of the capital plan, are processes embedded within the council's existing procedures. So historically, the capital plan is a sort of living and breathing document, and the amendment and the way it moves is a sort of fairly standard thing. I think most of the detail that Councillor Barclay's been through, I wouldn't necessarily add to. I think, apart from maybe to say that virtually every scheme has its own story, so there is a lot of detail in here. There are a lot of different reasons for a lot of the things happening. The risk around the HRA in particular is highlighted, and just then the forecast at the end shows that we expect 84% of the budget to be spent. And from a finance team perspective and a finance perspective, there has been a lot of work by the team, but also from colleagues and other services compiling this information. But from a finance perspective, this is very much a compilation report. So it's not necessarily the finance team knows all about this. It is information from across the council, and my thanks to everyone for providing that. The recommendation that the officers of the finance, the head of service and myself have concluded is that we do monitor the capital. We do have existing monitoring procedures for the capital plan. There is no doubt that we can look at these and revisit these, but these are robust, they are long established, and the officer recommendation is that we continue to monitor the capital plan and report through our existing processes, which are around regular capital plan update reports, which do come to both Cabinet and Council. So that would be my comments on what you have in front of you at the moment.
Thank you very much, Simon. Are there any questions that anyone wishes to ask Simon about anything that he's just said? No, that's great. Thank you very much. So are there any other points anyone wishes to raise, either to Tom or to anyone else? Councillor Mercer.
Thank you, Leader. The point was made that the risk is that of expectations and delay, which I think is obviously, from an accountant's perspective, is very logical. But I think the real risk is that we get this wrong, and that at the end of the day, it's our tenants who are those that suffer when we do get it wrong. And in the early few weeks of Fortum doing it, we had cases of people who were deprived a shower or a bath for several weeks because of the delays, and they're beginning to get it right now. And what happened over Christmas, they were told not to leave any tenant in a situation where they didn't actually have a shower, and I think that was the right decision. And I think that, yes, of course, we have ultimately have a responsibility to make sure that the money is spent. But I think we have a bigger responsibility to make sure that it's spent in the most cost-effective manner, and that we don't make mistakes that puts ordinary people in such a horrible predicament of not having being able to wash themselves. And therefore, although I think it's regrettable that we're not doing this as fast as we should be, I do think we're actually getting it right by actually making sure that they get it right before we push ahead.
Thank you. Any other questions or any other points anyone wishes to make? Thank you very much, Councillor Mercer. Councillor Barclay, if I can ask you to briefly summarise and then also move a proposal for us to vote on.
So, as far as the general fund, you've got the projections of where we're going at the end of the year in the appendixes. I haven't got the power of prophecy, but the predictions are that we will, in the main, meet the general fund budget. It is exactly as I said regarding the HRA, and I think we're making active steps to address that. I would like to thank Mr. Angel for coming tonight and also for his work with the Audit Committee over the last year. It's exactly what the Audit Committee is there for, and I hope this gives them some reassurance. It certainly does me, and I would, having listened to our Section 151 officer, I would recommend to Cabinet that we go with, in the light of the capital expenditure date, the head of Finance and Property Services recommends that the capital plan continues to be amended to reflect revised expenditure on a quarterly basis. This is something which is very much highlighted through Cabinet and through and will continue to be every quarter. So what's happening, it'll be brought back to us. And we'll all be aware of what the Audit Committee thought was a dreadful situation, which isn't quite as bad, but we can't rest on our laurels. We need to keep on top of it. So that is my recommendation. To reflect the outcome of the capital plan and also take into account the concerns of the Audit Committee.
Thank you very much. And can I ask Councillor Boker to second?
Yes, I'm happy to second that, Leader, including the reason.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. And again, thank you very much, Mr. Angel. Very, very kind of you to come this evening. Thank you. So we're now going to move to item 7, which is the Open Spaces Playing Pitch and Indoor Built Facilities Strategy. So I'd like to invite Councillor Capleton to the table to be ready to present his report on behalf of the Overview and Scrutiny Committee, or Overview and Scrutiny Group. I will say a few words on behalf of Councillor Harper-Davis, who unfortunately can't be here this evening. But she has actually written out some words, which I'm going to read out on the basis that I think it's right that her voice is heard this evening. So before you today is the strategy for the management of open spaces in the Borough of Charnwood. It provides a review of the 2013 open spaces strategy and the current action plan based on an up-to-date assessment of provision, user consultation and local needs analysis. It aims to provide a clear framework for practical action to protect and improve open spaces. It will guide prioritisation, management and resource allocation for the improvement of open spaces within the borough and will deliver good practice in all aspects of provision. It will also exploit opportunities to increase the provision of open space and support bids for future funding to improve the network of open space to meet current and future demands. The strategy and policies will ensure the Council's commitment to high quality open spaces is fully integrated into its strategies, plans and programmes by influencing and informing policy development and implementation across the Council's activities. The strategy is evidence-based and is thorough in its creation. Each section is detailed with an executive summary and has action plans. Should Cabinet choose to support the Open Spaces strategy this evening, it will run from the current time to 2036. So the strategy encompasses three components: overall open spaces, playing pitch strategy, and indoor built facilities. The Council's corporate plan of 2016 to 2020 aims to encourage healthy lifestyles for all of our residents through physical activity programmes and the provision of sports facilities and its green spaces. So these strategies will build on and protect existing facilities and ensure that accessibility to green spaces and sports infrastructure is maintained as the borough develops. So with that, I'm going to ask Councillor Capleton to present the report of the Overview and Scrutiny Group. Welcome.
Good evening, Chair. Good evening, all. This is an extremely long item consisting of three separate reports: the Open Space Strategy, the Playing Pitch Strategy, and the Indoor Built Facility Strategy, covering the period of 2018 to 2036. It was very difficult to examine all in minute detail. The reason we decided to scrutinise it was to try and make sure there were no intended cuts in the provision of services and the strategy was viable and realistic. After this examination and discussion, the group agreed there were no intended cuts in facilities and the schemes appeared sound and there was reasonable expectation that all would be funded jointly with the external contributors over the period of time. an initial £500,000 will be made available through the existing capital programme to start the schemes. a paper had been received from County Councillor Max Hunt, wherein he raised various points. Copies had been sent to the Cabinet. The points he raised were discussed with the head of cleansing and open spaces, and satisfactory answers were given. The final point about consultation was explored, and it turns out that public consultation had been held before the strategies had been developed. The group therefore agreed to recommend to Cabinet that the three strategies be adopted.
Thank you. So do we have any questions of clarity for Councillor Kebbleton? I'm going to just quickly ask one. I know you touched on the point, and it's quite clear from the your report that the issue of consultation had been raised, and by the looks of it, covered in great deal of detail. And my understanding is it wasn't just residents within Charnwood that were consulted. It was actually relevant bodies, national bodies, and also regional bodies as well.
And the people who normally contribute and operate the schemes for us. So. Yes, it was. It was, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much as well. I appreciate, I think all of Cabinet spent a good weekend of reading the document. So it's nice to know that OSG were busy reading it as well. For those who haven't read it, over 1,200 pages, I think probably without doubt wins the Charnwood record for the longest strategy ever produced in the borough. And with that, I'm going to invite Matt Bradford to the table, who's our head of cleansing and open spaces and one of the authors of the Charnwood novel. And what I'm going to ask you to do now, Matt, if you can, on behalf, because I know it's a piece of work not produced not only by yourself, but also many of the other officers working in other teams within the council who obviously are interlinked given the subject matter. But you're going to be answering questions on your behalf, and no doubt if you need to play tag with any of the other officers who are here with us this evening, that you no doubt will do if there are any curveball questions that you can't answer yourself. So with that, I'm going to ask you to present the report and the strategy, and then we'll ask you questions.
Thank you, Leader. So before you tonight for consideration, we've got three strategies and studies that have taken place over a number of months, and we're presenting them here for you for adoption tonight. The three strategies form part of the evidence for the local plan, and they've been conducted under the National Planning Policy Framework that states that assessments for these facilities should identify specific needs and be qualitative, quantitative, and identify any deficits and surpluses. The strategies aim to ensure that there's an adequate supply of good quality open spaces, sports facilities, both indoor and outdoor, from the present day to 2036. And all of the strategies account for the projected growth in population within the borough throughout this period. As part of the production of the strategies, consultation has taken place with parish councils, sports clubs, Sports England, and the wider public were invited to comment through the council's website. The strategies identify the need for future investment in facilities for residents throughout the borough. It's hoped that the studies and strategies will provide us with a sound evidence base that will allow the borough to attract investment from a variety of sources, including developer contributions, sports governing bodies, and grant award organisations. The report tonight doesn't commit any council funding for any of the projects identified, although it should be noted that there is already £500,000 in the existing capital plan to meet some of the objectives in the playing pitch strategy. So the open spaces strategy and study was conducted within the fields in trust standards that are commonly used. It looks at parks and gardens, amenity green space, semi-natural and natural open spaces, children's play, youth provision, allotments, civic spaces, green corridors and cemeteries and churchyards. And allotments. The action plan that's of particular relevance can be viewed at pages 77 to 100 in your agenda pack. The playing pitch study and strategy was conducted in line with Sport England guidance and addresses the needs of the following sports: football, cricket, rugby union, hockey, rugby league, outdoor tennis, golf, bowls, cycling, athletics and outdoor netball. The action plan for that particular strategy can be identified in pages 611 to 622 of the agenda pack that you have tonight. And finally, the indoor built facilities strategy again was conducted in line with Sport England guidance. The assessment and action plan look at facilities for the following sports: so general sports halls, indoor netball, badminton, basketball, volleyball, health and fitness centres, that includes dance and aerobic studios, squash courts, swimming pools and indoor tennis. And again, the action plan for that particular strategy can be found on pages 948 to 962. I think members would be happy if I didn't go through each page in detail, so I'd like to leave it there and invite any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. I think it would have been tempting to have started now. I'll just start with page one. So with that, I'm going to open it up to the floor and for anyone to actually ask any questions. So Councillor Rawlings, I can see your hand up.
Thank you. I can see there's references to consultations throughout the document. I just wondered what the take-up was like, because I know that we've kind of consulted lots of different groups and also our residents. But how did the officers feel the take-up to, you know, response levels to that consultation was? Was it good or you know, pretty average?
Through you, Leader, if I can. There was a small amount of public response from the general public. I don't have the exact figures here with me tonight to provide with you with, but I think it's important to note for each of the strategies that each of the national governing bodies has had to sign off the report before we've brought it here to you tonight. So they have seen the reports and agreed them. It's been signed off by Sport England as well, and they are the representatives of the sports clubs and organisations throughout the borough. So I think the consultation with regard to the strategies has been very thorough with regard to that. Yes.
Further questions? So can I ask you one question, man, if I can. I mean, everyone who lives in Charnwood clearly is extraordinarily proud of it and also very aware of the, you know, the amazing outdoor facilities that we have. And but obviously the sporting excellence through the university and the college and now through the construction of the Leicester City's sort of world-class training centre for football. As an area, we're clearly a step above probably anywhere else in the country as far as what we potentially have to offer for our residents, as far as groups and sports clubs and professional bodies that are actually based here in the borough. And do you think that has influenced the strategy as far as the ambition that you have for us as an authority to be a sort of a country leader, not just a county leader, but a country leader in as far as our strategy is concerned?
I think the fact that the borough has got quite a rich sporting heritage and obviously the university here has influenced the strategy quite a lot. We do have world-class facilities on our doorstep, and the strategies make reference to that and look to get community use of those facilities to make sure that grassroots sports do have the opportunity to use the excellent facilities that we have. I guess we need to mix that provision with those excellent facilities that are provided with the university with other facilities providers, so the borough council, parish councils and sports clubs, to make sure that we can provide that across the board for all grassroots sporting and leisure organisations, so that they have adequate facilities to use and play sport or just visit the countryside or their open spaces.
One of the things when I used to carry out Councillor Taylor's role and Councillor Taylor, I'm sure you probably found that this year as well, that the annual Charnwood Sports Awards, I think, is quite unique as far as sort of borough district councils, sort of similar events, on the basis that we mix everything from local village sports clubs all the way through to, you know, double gold Olympic medalists. And it's I think it is quite unique anywhere in the country that we have such a breadth of different representatives within our community who, you know, are everything from amateur but hugely enthusiastic supporters all the way through to world-class, world-beating athletes. So, I mean, hopefully we can accommodate everyone within our borough. So, Councillor Smidovich, you have a question.
No, I don't have a question, but just a comment, an observation, that when you see that report in its entirety, you realise how much we've got. That sometimes when you just see your own little patch, you don't realise. And even the tennis club up at the top of Nampanton, though it's not in my ward, it's in my colleague's ward, we have the name Nampanton on it, you see. So we're bathing the glory. But it's to go up there for the opening of world-standard tennis courts, really, considered locally. And just the little patch in my own ward that's been enhanced with quite a considerable grant. It's just given so much pleasure to so many little ones and grandparents that can go with them. And it's sort of almost from the sublime to the ridiculous when you think of a little playing field and yet the university at the other end. So I take your point about nurturing the ground, as it were. So thank the team.
Good comments. Very good comments. Anyone else wishes to say anything? So with that, I'm going to sum up. First of all, I'm going to thank you and also all of the other officers involved in producing the report. I have to say, I think you know, we've commented on the length, but actually it accommodates a huge amount. And I think we would be shortchanging ourselves by pretending that what we have to offer and the importance of the strategy going forward could be reduced to anything less. It's to actually bring everything together in a single strategy, I think, is incredibly useful because it helps to coordinate all the activities that we have and our plans for the future. And again, the way that we actually work with our communities and the different facilities, indoor, outdoor, open spaces, all the different sports that we cover. And again, making sure that has sign off from the all important national bodies to make sure that we have the accreditation of our strategy approved by the right people, I think gives us a great deal of comfort. And thank you very much to you and also to all of the other officers involved, because it has been an incredibly impressive piece of work to read. And I think we'll benefit from it. So with that, I'm going to move the recommendations, which are recommendations 1 to 3 on page 3 of the Cabinet report for the reasons stated 1 to 3. I'm going to ask Councillor Taylor to second.
Thank you, Leader. I'd like to second it and just say a few words as well. Reading this, it just echo what Councillor Smidovich just said about how much sport and facilities we do have here. And I think it's one of those strategies that, now it's been put together, will be quite well thumbed through it or electronically scrolled through. I think parishes, the boroughs, county, all that will be looking through that in years to come to see what they can do, what improvements we can make as the borough grows and grows. So I think it's a well worthwhile document. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much, Matt. Thank you. Now we move on to item 8, which is the discretionary houses in multiple occupation licensing scheme. We also have an OSG report for this one, so if I can invite Councillor Capleton to the table once more. I'm going to ask Councillor Smidovich to introduce the item and then invite Councillor Capleton to present the OSG report. And once we've asked questions of clarity to Councillor Capleton, Alison Simmons, who's the head of strategic and private sector housing, will join us at the table.
Right, thank you, Leader. Councillor Margaret Smidovich, first of all, I'd like to congratulate Alison Simmons, even though she's not at the table at the moment, before John starts, opens it up, because there's been a tremendous amount of work recently in the department. And we've also, on the day that this came to OSG, we managed to secure, or Alison has certainly managed to secure, a £65,000 grant from the government to build on the extensive research already undertaken by Professor Smith. So when the report was prepared, we had not actually received the good news, so it sort of changed things marginally. And because this money had come in, and I wasn't able to actually see the report till 4 o'clock at the end of last week, there wasn't too much time to discuss anything further within the report. So hence, when I came to OSG for the meeting, I was a little bit concerned that one or two of the aspects could cause confusion or be misleading later on in the process. So I wanted to be able to amend one of the recommendations, but was told it was only Cabinet here that could do it. So I don't know if you want me to make the...
That's fine.
So the purpose of the report was to consider the comments and recommendations of the overview to provide an update on the decisions made by Cabinet in November 2015 to consider the introduction of discretionary houses and multiple occupation licensing scheme and the progress to implement a Loughborough accreditation standard in partnership with the Students' Union. And there were three recommendations made. Cabinet to note the evidence gathered to date and the impact of the implementation of the government's expansion of the mandatory licensing of HMOs in Loughborough. To gather Cabinet to agree further investigations being undertaken to gather evidence as referred to in paragraph 61, which read to assess the possibility of the introduction of an additional or selective licensing scheme. And the third one that was Cabinet to note that a borough-wide accreditation scheme with the Students' Union will not be taken forward. So that was the focus of the meeting. So would you like me to hand over to John now?
Thank you very much. Discretionary licensing scheme. This was an update on the decisions made by Cabinet in November 2015 to consider the introduction of discretionary housing and multiple occupancy licensing scheme in Loughborough. During the discussions, there was much dispute between the lead cabinet member for regulatory service enforcement and licensing and the head of strategic and private sector housing over the accuracy of the statistics on which the report was based. Councillor Smidovich quoted many incidents and complaints regarding HMOs that she had received and said she had photographic evidence to back up her allegations. The head of strategic and private sector housing insisted that she could only consider incidents that had been officially reported. The group commented that the whole argument was based on statistics. As these were in some dispute, this fact must be drawn to the attention of Cabinet. It was also noted that statistics were all based on complaints received, so any HMOs for which there had been no complaints were not considered to be part of a problem. There appears to be no proactive effort to establish the size of the problem. People could be living in substandard or dangerous conditions, but as long as they didn't complain, no problem was recognised. Council could also be failing to collect large sums of council tax. An example is that there, of possible inaccurate information, reference made to the fact that 1,653 HMOs have been identified in the report by Professor Darren Smith. To make a total of 2,509. Until that report was received, there was thought to be only 856 within Charnwood. The group considered that the statistics were in question, and if decisions were to be made based on the statistics, then any decisions themselves would be questionable. It is therefore difficult to draw firm conclusions to support all the recommendations, but recommendation one, Cabinet to note the evidence gathered to date. We feel the Cabinet does need to note the evidence that has been gathered, but must be aware that the evidence is in dispute when the Cabinet is advised to treat it with reserve until the disputes involving the statistics can be resolved. Recommendation two, Cabinet agreed to further investigations being undertaken group endorses this, but it is essential again to remember the statistic dispute as mentioned in recommendation one. It was also noted that the grant of £65,000 had been received from the Rogue Landlord Enforcement Scheme. I believe £15,000 to be used by the Planning Department for actions involving the local plan. The other £50,000 could be used to carry out further research. On recommendation three, there's no dispute. Cabinet note the accreditation scheme of the students will not be taken forward. This is due to the lack of funds from the student union. It must be noted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Capleton. Are there any questions of clarity that anyone wishes to ask Councillor Capleton? No questions of clarity. Thank you very much, Councillor Capleton. I think you've got one more report to do, haven't you? So I won't thank you quite yet. Okay, if I could ask Alison Simmons to come to the table as well. So Alison is Head of Strategic and Private Sector Housing. And Alison, obviously a number of points raised through the OSG discussion, and I wasn't at the meeting, so I don't know precisely what all of the points were. But by all means, if you could sketch out where we are, that would be helpful in relation to the report as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leader. The report covers all the information in relation to the types of licensing from mandatory to discretionary, and they're detailed on pages 28 to 29. Also on page 29 details the concerns that have been raised by councillors in respect of licensing and the need for it for discretionary. On page 29, I've also detailed the number of licences that have been, the number of licences we started with prior to mandatory licensing. So you can see the increase of the number of applications we've received. And I can provide you with a further update today that we now have 454 licences that have been issued, 272 that are in the process of being assessed. And we've got 90 days in which to turn those around. That's 90 working days. So that will, once those have been processed and the majority of them will obviously be provided with licences, we'll be up to 726 licensed HMOs under the existing mandatory scheme. On page 30, it lists all the complaints we've received over the last 5 years, and this is from all the council services, Loughborough University and Loughborough Student Advisory Services. So that's all the complaints data added together to give us a percentage of what the as the percentage of the antisocial behaviour, etc., against HMOs to the rest of the properties in that area. The next part of the report then goes into the actions that the council takes, and as Cabinet are aware, recently, well, the end of last year, approved a corporate enforcement policy to take an incremental approach, and then each service area who have got an enforcement policy, like private sector housing enforcement policy, has then replicated that incremental approach through the services that we provide. And this part of the report explains all the policies that the council has and all the legislation that we can currently use where we don't need licensing to be able to take enforcement action. So page 36 onwards goes into the drivers for introducing additional and selective licensing. Additional licensing is purely for houses in multiple occupation that don't meet the current mandatory scheme. So that's five or more people in two or more households. Selective licensing would be a licensing scheme that would cover the whole of the private rented sector. So not HMOs, sorry, houses in multiple occupation, any other private let properties. If you did it as a borough-wide, again, you'd need Secretary of State approval. If you did anything below 20%, and that's if there was different particular areas within the borough didn't amount to 20%, then Secretary of State approval isn't required. Again, the other aspect of that is they have to be assured tenancy, they have to be private tenancies, that any registered providers, properties, etc., would not be included as a private sector property in that aspect. Page 18 provides the conclusion in relation to the evidence gathered to date, and this is where, as Councillor Caperton's already explained, that there's, from my perspective, there's insufficient evidence with the evidence that has been recorded and that I've included in the report. And then on page 42, I provided details of the successful bid, and thank you for the praise earlier, Councillor Smidovich. But I'd just like to outline the key objectives of the funding, which is to identify and map unlawful properties, improve the housing standards, establish lawful use of these properties, which can be made to comply with the minimum housing, health and safety and planning requirements, improving community cohesion and safety by responding to residents' concerns, collect unpaid council tax and council tax premiums for those properties that can be brought back into use, and prosecute rogue landlords where applicable who let substandard properties to vulnerable residents. And then the last aspect of the report is in relation to the housing accreditation. Many meetings were held with the student union to go through the purpose of what the accreditation could be and how we could expand the existing scheme. But at the very last meeting, they advised that they no longer had the resources, which is why I've said that this won't be taken forward at this time. Thank you.
Very much. Thank you very much for that. Can I ask you a quick question, both from my reading of the report, but also something you've just touched on, which is the being very clear about the difference between additional and selective licensing. In particular, selective licensing obviously has a wider remit on the basis that it's private sector housing as a whole, but with general exceptions. And you mentioned HMO being one of those exceptions. Is it right that actually the exception is actually a mandatory HMO rather than actually all HMOs?
So it'll be a mandatory HMO. Sorry, I didn't clarify that.
So just for clear, so basically anything that isn't currently a mandatory HMO would still be picked up on selective licensing. Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions that anyone wishes to ask? Thank you very much. Councillor Rawlings and then Councillor Taylor.
Thank you. Just in terms of this grant, which is great, we've got it, how much of that will be used towards actually, you know, knocking on doors and inspecting properties? If we've got this this report, say Professor Smith's work, that identifies, I can't remember the number, but it's what, about 1,600 or so suspected HMOs, how much of that are we going to dedicate to getting staff out and inspecting these suspected HMOs to see if they ought to be licensed, or whether that then will build an evidence base for additional or selective licensing in certain areas of the borough?
The funding is split £15,000 for planning to do the work they need in order to inform the local plan and the core strategy policies, etc., and £50,000 for this piece of work, which will include door knocking. And it's just looking at the best way to do that, and I have been talking to Dave Hawkins, our procurement officer, in relation to whether we do somebody just go around and do a blitz of a survey, and then we send the technical officers in afterwards, so I'm just working through that process.
Thank you, Leader. Do you know how many other authorities, local authorities, have got selective or additional licensing in place already? Just to compare how many authorities have got that.
There's quite a number. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. I believe Councillor Smidovich has that number. In the report, it does specify the ones that have introduced it. I've given some examples, and I've taken on, again, for example, like Warwick, because they've got a university. So I've tried to do comparisons with like-size boroughs and districts.
It was quite helpful, actually, seeing a comparative table. And is it in the 60s?
65,
okay. Councillor Mercer.
Can I just go back to the point you made initially, Leader? The difference between a selective and additional licensing. As I understand it, selective licensing is where it doesn't meet the criteria for mandatory or additional, because in authorities where they have both, obviously they're not going to be licensed twice.
Additional is for the houses in multiple occupations that don't fall under the mandatory scheme, and then obviously if you had selective licensing and did the whole of private sector, it would be those again that didn't fall under the mandatory scheme.
So in other words, the clarity is that actually they don't get licensed twice.
Selective is something completely.
That's correct.
Permission being required from the Secretary of State. Would you just run through that again? You were talking about a percentage, 20%.
In paragraph, where are we? I want to make sure I get the terminology right. So what you've got to look at is if you're implementing a selective licensing scheme, how much of the borough does that replicate? And if it's more than 20%, then you need Secretary of State approval. But what, it's not just one area that's 20%. If, yeah, so if you had three or four areas across the borough that then contributed to over 20%, you would need Secretary of State approval.
So if there was one 5%, another 10%, and another 12.5%, then that would require Secretary of State approval. Yeah, okay. Councillor Boker.
Yeah, sorry, could I just clarify that? Because I thought at the briefing session we had, it was only for selective licensing that you needed Secretary of State approval.
It is. Sorry, that's what I thought we were referring to.
Sorry. Yeah, so for additional, we don't require it.
No, sorry.
I wanted to clear that up. And also, Leader, sorry, did you want to say something? Right, so just to clarify, additional licensing doesn't require Secretary of State approval.
That is correct, but we have to carry out a consultation exercise for at least a period of 10 weeks to explain why and what the licence fee is.
Okay, so you would be prepared to do that if you thought the evidence was there for additional licensing?
If we had sufficient evidence, yes, we'd go out to consultation.
Sorry? Now I'm back on again. I've got another question.
Oh.
Sorry.
No, because otherwise we can't hear Alison's response.
Sorry. We heard it, though, didn't we?
Sorry.
Go on.
If there was sufficient evidence, yes, I would be happy to go out to consultation. I would be recommending to go out to consultation.
Thank you. And this would be evidence over and above Professor Smith's, which obviously there was a lot of evidence in his papers, which the council paid for. We asked him to do the work, didn't we?
Yes, we commissioned Professor Smith to provide the numbers. I think what the difference is here, Professor Smith has provided us with the numbers of HMOs in the borough.
Yes.
What we now need to know is, are they those properties being managed sufficiently sufficiently ineffectively, and therefore we need an additional licensing scheme.
I'm sorry to labour this point, but I am, as the lead member for Loughborough, I'm actually worried about our residents, whether they're native to this country or foreign. And obviously, we think there is evidence of a number of very bad situations, overcrowding, three or four people to a bedroom. We know that there are areas where this is occurring, like Meadow Lane and Moor Lane, that sort of thing. And my concern is that we have a duty of care to our residents. And I appreciate that you think the same thing as me. And I really do think that we need to get to the bottom of these over 1,600 houses that have been identified as possible HMOs. And I just want to give you an example, because my daughter is currently looking for a house in Loughborough. And we went probably October, November time to a house down Moor Lane, and it was heavily barricaded. We didn't realise until we went, with fencing and, he had a code on his garden gate and everything. And when we went inside, we realised they were from Poland, and they had converted the attic for a lodger. And I'm not joking, he, as a builder, he said, he had created a further front door as you went into this very well locked up premises that had a new stairs put in that literally went like that. So it was almost like a ladder. And he clearly converted the attic upstairs with little kitchenette, etc., wires, water near the kitchenette, and all this sort of thing. Electricity, I meant, near the kitchenette. And, when I saw it, I thought, does he have planning permission for this? Has he had building regs round here? Because I'm sure building regs wouldn't have allowed a new front door to be established for the lodger upstairs. So that's just one example. and I've said to Margaret that I will look up the address to give it to her, but it worries me that we have residents living in very poor conditions in possible HMOs in Loughborough.
We have current legislation, and as I've detailed within the report, the policies, etc., that we can use. So we don't need licensing to be able to take action, and we do take action. And I think one thing to state that, and I will read this to make sure I get this correctly, the law states that any decision to implement a selective or additional licensing scheme must be consistent with the council's housing strategy and must be part of a coordinated approach for dealing with homelessness, empty homes and antisocial behaviour. The council must be satisfied that there are no other courses of action that might provide an effective remedy and that the introduction of a licence scheme will significantly assist in dealing with the problem. So there is a lot of evidence that the council needs to collect before it can introduce such a scheme.
And I think that's a very good point to make because it's quite clear that any licensing scheme has to identify what can't be achieved by current legislation elsewhere, and I think that's something that we have been all debating for a number of years, and this is clearly within not only within Loughborough but also within the Charnwood area. I think has proved to be a hot topic. I think is probably the right way of describing it for a number of years, and I think that's probably why there's a huge amount of passion over this as a subject matter. Councillor Rowlings and Councillor Taylor.
Yeah, just one point. Although the existing legislation doesn't give us it gives us the right to inspect properties, but it doesn't allow for an inspection to take place every 5 years, whereas, as I can see it, there would be some benefit. I appreciate subject to evidence and a lot of consultation, and there's clearly more work to be done, but that would then at least ensure that we're having one inspection of these properties once every 5 years to make sure the standards are being upheld, because at the minute, for those that don't fall into our licensing scheme, those properties aren't being checked and we're relying on people complaining, and the people that we're looking to protect are probably the most vulnerable, who probably won't complain. So that's probably the only point I make about what powers we already have and what we would get potentially from licensing.
What you just read out, is that government legislation?
Yes.
Yeah. Are we able to find out what the councils that have already either got selective or additional licensing, what evidence they had to force them to go or want to go down that route? Have we done any correlation of that data as to why they decided to go down that action?
Yeah, in relation to, in the report, I've stipulated the ones that have taken schemes forward. And if you look at Ashfield, who recently bought in a scheme, when you compare our number of complaints, and we're looking at 15%, so it's well below 20%, their actual issues were up to like 45% of all the complaints. So there's a dramatic difference to the complaints that we receive. And I do take on board that my role is to make sure I protect the residents that you're representing, which is why we've got the legislation in place to take these things forward. And I have worked where there's been additional and selective licensing. And if you look at some of the areas where it's been introduced, if you look at Hastings, for example, that's because the areas are really deprived. And we haven't got the areas, I'm not saying that there's a comparison, but we haven't got the areas of deprivation that they've got in their private rented sector down there in Loughborough that we'd have to evidence to show the comparison. So we can provide more information, but I think it does, through this report, it does explain where schemes have been introduced and the reasons why.
Chief Exec.
Those local authorities that have been referred to where they've got these schemes, they will have been through a public consultation process. Most of that consultation is published. You can see it. I personally looked at some of it. It's very extensive. I think it's reasonable to say that the approach that other authorities have taken is very similar to the approach that our officers have taken here, which is to look at what's actually being reported, what's evidence. That doesn't diminish the fact that all around the country there are problems with housing where tenants or residents don't actually report. I don't think that's a Loughborough issue that's particularly separate from elsewhere. most authorities, for all the ones I've read, have used the same kind of analysis and evidence base that is in your report tonight, and there are quite a large number of them. Obviously, all the situations are different, and therefore that's why the scheme, whether it's selective or additional licensing, is selected by those authorities. Obviously, the issue with Charnwood, there are probably two kinds of issues. There is initial concerns about the management of HMOs, based on what we thought was the case with student occupancy and effective management of that, which was what the original scrutiny was about. The recent work that's been done, and I did hear the figure that we thought there were only several hundred. We've always had a figure of around 2,000 for HMOs. The research done this year has actually increased that to 2,500 or so, but it's also illustrated that those HMOs are not actually predominantly in Loughborough. They're in other parts of the borough, and that they're not occupied predominantly by students either. So we've got new information, but as Alison has said, that doesn't actually illustrate that there's a greater degree of reported problems with those properties. In fact, probably the opposite, because I suspect we've got very few complaints about HMOs that are outside the borough. And so the evidence base, the process that we've been through, the point I'm trying to make is we've looked at this in a similar way to other local authorities, and compared to them, our evidence is not as compelling as in those other places, which does not mean there isn't a problem. It doesn't mean we don't need to take action. And particularly, there will be cases, as Councillor Boak has spoken about. The question is really that, as Alison referred to earlier, is a licensing system, in the round, when you take all the other measures into account, necessary to meet the requirements for looking after our residents that we have? That's basically the question, I think. But in terms of getting back to the question of have we seen what others have done, yes, we've looked at quite a number of other cases up and down the country and the process that they've gone through to decide to implement or not, because not everybody's then implemented when they've done their consultation.
Thank you for that. So we've got a couple more questions lined up. Councillor Mercer and then Councillor Poland.
Just respond to Deborah's question. In order to get selective licensing, you have to only meet one of a number of criteria, of which deprivation is obviously one of them. But another is that of high migration, a high turnover. And I actually just picked out one as an example of a council of a similar size, a town similar size to Loughborough. And I looked at Peterborough, which has introduced selective licensing. And in their consultation and in their evidence on migration, they looked at the turnover of people who are living in the areas that they were considering, and it was relatively high. But it's nothing like as high as the turnover in parts of Loughborough, which turns over every 9 months. They also looked at crime, and one of the statistics Peterborough cited as evidence for selective licensing was that in the year they looked at, in Peterborough, which has a population about 40% bigger than Loughborough, there were 577 burglaries in Peterborough in 1 year. That meant that the chance of one person being burgled in Peterborough was 1 in 140, and that was considered sufficient evidence. I then, somewhat laboriously this afternoon, went through the police statistics for Loughborough, and in 1 year, we actually had 661 burglaries in Loughborough. That means the chances of being burgled in Loughborough is actually 1 in 89, which is considerably higher than Peterborough, and Peterborough used that statistic to justify selective licensing. And as I say, given that there are five separate criteria for selective licensing, simply because we don't necessarily meet one of them doesn't mean we don't actually meet the other one. And it's relatively easy to see the evidence that other authorities have put together to justify their own case for selective licensing. It's all on the internet, and it does make some quite interesting reading. And I'm certainly convinced that there is quite a strong case for us to introduce it, perhaps not across the whole of Charnwood, but certainly in parts of Loughborough that meet more than one of those criteria.
Councillor, Alison, would you like to comment on that? Sorry.
I just add to that, on page 37 of the report, because we did actually contact Peterborough, and what we were told at the time, and whether this has changed since, but I haven't seen anything updated, but the selective licences was introduced to improve the management and conditions of the properties in the private rented sector, which in turn would reduce the crime and ASB. So that's why they did it, and all of the wards were subject to selective licensing, had higher than the Peterborough average and large percentage changes that they've seen. And the figures that they gave me at the time from their scheme, but this was based in 2015, was that there were 8,330 ASB instances recorded by Cambridgeshire Police within the city. Of these, 3,218 occurred within the designated areas, which was 38.6% of the overall total, and that's the reason why they brought a scheme in.
Councillor Pollard.
Thank you, Leader. Just really wanted to ask a question around the government thing you read out a few minutes ago, just to clarify that in relation to what we established earlier on, that we don't need Secretary of State approval for additional licensing. So, simple question, really, I think. To whom do we demonstrate that we've met the government criteria that you've read out? Is it the case that we need to sort of establish that to the government initially just to get this thing going? Or is it that if we don't have that and decide to go for additional licensing anyway, we could be subject to judicial review or appeal?
Okay. Under Section 56(3) of the Housing Act 2004, prior to designating an area, we have to take reasonable steps to consult persons who are likely to be affected by the designation, so i.e. the owners of the properties that then are going to have to pay the licence fee, consider any representations made in accordance with the consultation and not withdrawn, and then the authority must then consider that a significant proportion of the HMOs of that description in that area are being managed sufficiently ineffectively as to give rise or likely to give rise to one or more particular problems either for those occupying the HMOs or for members of the public. So, and like previously has been said, is obviously that's not the mandatory licensing. So, yes, it can be for different reasons that you'd introduce, but you have to go through that process. There hasn't been any more case law that has really, I suppose, given any context more to the managed sufficiently ineffectively. So there is an issue there that there's not as much clarity, but again, you would need to know, you'd need to know that there was a significant amount of evidence to then to stop you from having legal challenge from members of the public, landlords, landlord associations, etc.
Right, I think we have run out of questions. So, in which case, I'm going to ask Councillor Smidovich now to briefly summarise and move recommendation. I think you mentioned, Councillor Smidovich, at the beginning that I think the second recommendation possibly may be a couple of words different, but otherwise I'll allow Councillor Smidovich to explain and summarise.
It's acceptable, Leader, that I tell you why I'm so passionate about this and my concerns. Right? certain things you don't actually like to sort of raise too much in public, but the starting point for this two scrutiny panels we've had with 22 recommendations, we all know that. But the reason why the second scrutiny panel was formed was, first of all, to consider the impact of student occupancy. And that it was formed because the evidence that was coming forward to planning was insufficient. We were having planning approval given for HMOs because the percentage in those roads and areas was hadn't met a 20% criteria. Residents were coming forward and arguing that it was much more than the criteria of 20%. And it now shows from the number of streets that have had 70%, 50%, and the work that Professor Smith has undertaken has actually shown for sure that the evidence at the beginning was faulty. that was the reason the scrutiny panel started in the first place. I think we have always known that there was a significant proportion of student HMOs, but I think for me what was causing me most concern when I read the report the other night was the fact that I picked up also Darren Smith's report, which really wasn't alluded to very much at all. We've tended to focus on the student aspect, I felt, in the report. But in Professor Smith's report, he actually states to continue to conceptualise Loughborough's HMO market solely as student housing market is outdated, given the identification of diverse non-student HMO markets across the town and other towns and villages across the borough, which Jeff Parker has alluded to as well. Professor Smith's report has clearly highlighted that while students make up 52% approximately of the rental market, approximately 46% is made up of non-students. And increasingly, a number of landlords are using the spare capacity within houses and converted attics to rent out rooms to others. Now, who the others are is the interesting question. And who the landlords are is also an interesting question. Under the 2016 Act, we have to prove that our landlords are fit and proper persons. And we know for a fact there are landlords that aren't fit and proper persons. And we also know that there are individuals in the houses themselves who do not necessarily have the right to rent. Now, the fact that we have lots of gardens, perhaps, that are untidy and untidy waste does not actually get us into the houses to check them in the first place. That's my concern, and this is why when Brandon Smith was introducing the mandatory licensing scheme, altering it from where it was 5+. Sorry? Brandon Lewis, who was the Minister for Small Communities. We actually met him, David Slater and I met him locally, and he confirmed in writing to me afterwards through our MP, and I'd like to just read a part of what his letter said. We've made a number of changes to selective licensing to ensure it helps local authorities to focus their enforcement action where it is most needed. The criteria for selective license have been expanded to cover areas experienced by poor property conditions, large amounts of inward migration, a high level of deprivation, or high levels of crime. These changes will help ensure that local authorities have the right tools to target enforcement action where it's needed. That was selective. Bearing in mind this was 2015, local authorities already have powers to introduce landlord licensing schemes to tackle particular local problems, like antisocial behaviour, poor management of smaller houses in multiple occupation, and these schemes are designed to tackle local problems, and we believe that decisions about introducing licences are taken locally in consultation with the communities affected. So, particularly the second recommendation is for additional licensing. We have had, and I think this is where the concerns rise, in the last few years we have had countless attics converted. You don't need planning permission for them, but you don't know in every case that there are attics. There's been there's certain things that I don't want to go into depth tonight here, but fire, for example, in unlicensed properties, the number of inspections that have taken place are not very many at all. Now we are, with the mandatory scheme that Alison and her team are undertaking, we're getting into those places. But I have not been able to get hold of a list of which houses and how many have actually ever had been accredited appropriately. And unless you actually have a reason to go in and knock on a door, I don't think we have been doing it. And the number of cases in my own ward where I have notified of a house And I'm told, well, we can't go in and inspect. We've always had the right. If we suspect an HMO is in place and it may not have a licence, Section 239 of the Housing Act 2004 says we have the powers of entry to inspect its stock. What we haven't had is staff or the willingness to go in and knock on the doors. We wait for the formal complaints to come through, and vulnerable people are not going to make the complaints. And that is why I had the concerns about the second recommendation that we were trying to redo work that's been undertaken for 3 years. We have 1,653 properties that need to be investigated. So would you like me to read what I would like the second recommendation to be?
Yes, if you want to read it out, if it's...
if it fits. So I just didn't want it to be misleading in the future, and that's my concern.
So do you want to do all three recommendations? Recommendation one is unchanged.
Right, sorry, I've just got to go back and find it again. So recommendation one is okay. Yes, we've got it now, yeah. I think. Is it showing on there?
Yeah, it should do. Yeah,
well, sorry, it's not showing on there.
Should I read out?
Yeah, read it out, please.
So you suggested recommendation one unchanged.
Yes.
Recommendation two would be Cabinet to
establish
further investigations being undertaken to gather evidence as referred to in paragraph 61 to establish the case for the introduction of an additional
or selective licensing scheme.
Section recommendation three to be unchanged. And for reasons 1, 2, 3, as stated. Is that right?
Pretty well, yes. I'm sorry. It shot out, yes. I think the concern is that we may end up spending another 4 years and still not having introduced licensing.
Well, so
we want a consultation.
So we need to establish the case, which is recommendation two.
Yes, that would be.
Right. You didn't say any of that with your microphone to me.
Did I not?
I've got a booming voice. As long as Laura.
That's
Laura.
Yeah, I think so. Can I just speak to
you? Absolutely.
Mm. Yes, go on.
It's recommendation two, really.
So,
you can read that back to us.
If I can ask Councillor Boker to second this.
My pleasure, Leader. I second this item.
Thank you very much. And I think it's probably everyone has a chance to talk about this one, which is not unexpected, given it's a very hot topic in the area. So with that, can I ask to see all of those in favour of those three recommendations? And that is everyone. So thank you very much, Alison. Thank you very much, Margaret. Thank you very much, Jenny, as well, and to all those who contributed. So with that, and that was everyone, by the way, for the record. With that, can we go to item 9, which is the Tenancy Strategy 2019-2024. Councillor Capleton, we had not forgotten you. You're back for your third and final. I have to say your OSG this week must have been quite a mammoth session. So well done for picking three really good subjects as well. So I'm going to ask Councillor Mercer at this point to introduce the item and then pass over to Councillor Capleton to present the OSG report. And then, John, if you wish to stay for any questions of clarity that anyone wishes to ask you, and then by all means you're finally released from the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Leader. The tenancy strategy is something that we have to do under the 2011 Localism Act. It's to do with how we relate to our housing associations, our registered providers. We have to publish a strategy which sets out what the Act says have regard to formulating, which in fact really means what we expect them to do. What kind of tenancies we expect them to have, the circumstances in which they grant those tenancies, if for how long they last and the circumstances for extending them. So it's a relatively straightforward document. It was published originally. Alison has done an excellent job not only updating it but making it readable for ordinary people, which is what it's actually aimed at, because the Act also says that it has to be accessible in terms of them being able to pick up a copy in the council offices if they want to see it. The Act doesn't actually mention the internet, but obviously today that they can access it there. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, there's 10 strategies. Yes, this was very much less controversial than the last one. Tenancy strategy sets out council's expectations of registered providers of housing in the borough as to the kinds of tenancies they can grant. The strategy is advisory, but it's hoped that the registered providers and the council itself will conform. It is a requirement of the 2011 Localism Act that the strategy be produced. Strategy covers items such as fixed-term strategies, affordable rent, mutual exchanges and rights of succession. The only item that was queried by the group was the fixed-term tenancies. These are not used by Charnwood Borough at present. This is used by certain registered providers, but not by the council. There is no firm plan at the moment to introduce them, but being in the strategy, they are available if necessary. It is therefore recommended that the tenancy strategy for 2019-24 be approved, and the head of strategic and private housing, in conjunction with the lead cabinet member, be given the delegated authority to make amendments in response to future legislative changes. Thank you, Leader.
Councillor Gaveston, thank you very much for that. So can I ask for any questions of clarity? I thought that was pretty clear, so thank you very much. So, Councillor Capleton, can I again thank you personally, but also can I thank all of your group? I can see Councillor Gerrard there, who would have participated also in the OSG meeting earlier this week. So can you please pass our thanks back from Cabinet as ever? Really, really do value the extra input that OSG provide to us and to add to the debate for this evening. From reading the notes, I can tell. Thank you very much. At this point, if I can ask Alison Simmons, who's our head of strategic and private sector housing, to return to the table. And if Alison, thank you very much for preparing this strategy. I have to say I agree completely with Councillor Mercer's comments about it being a very readable scheme and document. Over the past few years in particular, which I suspect is probably coincidental with you and also Peter Oliver being part of the team, I have to say our documentation has become extraordinarily good, very clear, very accessible, and I think that's a huge positive for our residents, but particularly also very good for us as councillors as well. So if you would like to carry on presenting any items that you wish to add, and then we can ask you some questions.
Thank you, Leader. Well, the first thing I'd like to do is do an apology because there are a number of spelling mistakes in this strategy, which I am quite embarrassed by, and I'll be making sure that they're amended before it's published. And the biggest mistake, which is the actual period of time the strategy will run from, which is 2019 to 2024 rather than 2022, which is on the strategy. So, again, I do apologise for that. I think the only thing I've got to add from the introduction and the OSG report is that in the Housing and Planning Act 2016, there was going to be a mandatory requirement to introduce fixed-term tenancies, and we were waiting guidance, which was one of the reasons for the delay. But the recent Green Paper, A New Deal for Social Housing 2018, has indicated that the government will no longer be making these fixed-term tenancies a mandatory requirement. So, and then the last thing to add is the tenancy policy currently doesn't provide fixed-term tenancies, and that is under review and tenants will be consulted, and that will be brought back to Cabinet separately by the Head of Landlord Services.
Thank you very much, and that's what I answered as well, so thank you very much for clarifying that. Are there any questions that anyone wishes to raise with Alison for information or clarity? Everyone's run out of questions.
But again, it's very clear paper and a good strategy. And I'm sure the spell check will sort out the other bits and pieces. So with that, I'm going to ask Councillor Mercer to move some recommendations, and I'll invite a seconder, who I believe will be Councillor Rawlings.
Thank you, Leader. Can I just clarify with Adrian, is the second recommendation, is that consistent with, first of all, being able to make these changes, and secondly, with the Act itself, which does state that we must keep the strategy under review and may modify it as we see fit? Is that consistent with that recommendation, or do we need to modify that slightly?
I think, Leader, my advice would be that it is consistent with the recommendation. It is an executive function, which is something the Leader would normally delegate individually, but I think collectively, particularly as the Leader is here tonight, that Council approving that amendment to the Constitution in respect of the delegation of an executive function is an acceptable way of proceeding.
Thank you. And, of course, the other thing we will be modifying is my photograph, which we will be bringing up to date. I would first of all like to propose, one, that the overarching tenancy strategy in relation to the borough attached as Appendix 1 to this report be approved, and that, two, that the head of strategy in private sector housing, in consultation with the Cabinet lead member for housing, be given delegated authority to make amendments to the strategy in response to future legislative changes at local or regional level, or government guidance, and the constitution be amended accordingly. And the reasons are, one, to comply with the statutory requirements of the Localism Act 2011, and two, to ensure that strategy remains fit for purpose. Thank you.
Thank you. Leader, I'd like to second this.
Thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's absolutely everyone. Thank you very much. And thank you very much, Alison, as well. If we can now move on to the penultimate item, which is item 10, which is the procurement strategy 2018-19 to 2024-25. So at this point, I'm inviting David Hawkins, who's our procurement manager, to the table. Thank you very much for staying on for this item, David. And I'm going to ask Councillor Barclay to introduce the report and then pass over to you as well.
So this is our updated procurement strategy. It's a very comprehensive document. The procurement strategy provides a framework for this council to obtain value in all its procurement activities, and the strategy addresses all elements of procurement, from identifying the need, considering options, procuring the appropriate goods, services or work, effective supplier and contract management, through to the disposal of the asset. The strategy also addresses the many solutions available to the Council, from establishing corporate contracts using collaborative and consortium arrangements through the developing of a long-term strategic partnership, and also meeting our corporate aims. The previous strategy came to us in 2013, and this strategy, which I say it is really, really comprehensive, goes on for pages and pages. I've read it twice. I think I understand it. I did offer to help David with procurement, but he declined. But it really does cover everything. The strategy has already been reviewed by the Policy Scrutiny Group on the 10th of July, and I appeared before them, and we went through it with David. And the new strategy reflects all the changes in EU law which have been put into our law, so it's not going to be affected by Brexit. And there's been, during the last 4 years, there have been various innovations in procurement, web-based procurement, G-Cloud, and various other ways that we procure. It is based on the fact that we're committed to supporting the local economy. It's crucial that we attain high quality, best value to do everything we want to do and to help the council achieve its objectives. The borough council is one of the largest purchasers of goods and services in the borough, and it has both legal and ethical responsibilities. We're working to promote methods of sustainable procurement. We train our officers, and we also use Contract Finder for all contracts over 25,000. We consider our environment. We also manage our procurement through a central procurement team. That doesn't mean it's all centralised, because we use people with levels of expertise in different areas of the council. We prioritise and plan. We do option and strategic appraisals. And as I say, I think the one thing that we really do is try and keep everybody up to date. So procurement management is undertaken. We're looking for efficiency, specifications, control of it, a risk-based approach, continuing review, and probably most importantly, training and development, and partnership working. I've spoken to David about whether we're up to date with how we do electronic purchasing. A lot of it is done through Agresso, our system. David keeps a close eye on it. I think the policy scrutiny group were very happy with the strategy. So am I. And I won't say anything else. I'll let David add anything, because he knows he's written this, he's done it, he's been through it, and he knows exactly what's going on.
I'm sure, David, you've got lots to add from what Councillor Barclay just...
Unfortunately, after Tom's very comprehensive introduction, I do not have a lot to add. But if anybody would like to ask any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Will do. Thank you very much. Councillor Barclay, you always rob officers of the chance to actually present reports.
No, not with this one, I don't. No. This is the man who knows what he's talking about with this. And seriously, we rely on him very heavily. I think there was a desire from some councillors to meddle in it, and I certainly would dissuade that.
So with that warning, would anyone wish to actually raise any questions or meddle? Can I see any hands? No. Everyone's taken that comment as being an action. Thank you very much for this as a report. Tom clearly has well and truly sung your praises, but also covered the contents of the report, I think, very effectively. So with that, I'm going to ask Councillor Barclay to move the recommendations, and then if I can ask Councillor Poland to second.
So I make the recommendation that the procurement strategy 2018-19 to 2024-25 attached as Appendix A to the report be approved, and the reason is to provide a basis for procurement practices within this council which support the aims of the corporate plan. I'm sorry.
Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. And David, thank you very much for staying this evening as well. So with that, I'm going to invite Alison to come back for her third and final visit. And I'm going to... this is item 11, which is the Collective Energy Switching Scheme. So I'm going to invite Councillor Mercer to introduce the report and then pass over to... Alison to add any additional items before we ask any questions.
Thank you, Leader. There is not many issues that Alison and I disagree on, with the exception of HMOs and what type of champagne we like. And this is certainly one that we agree totally on. If you actually look at the average electricity, actual energy bill in the UK, it's just over £1,000, yet 60% of people are still on the standard variable rate. If they did change, there would be savings on average of £250. And remarkably, 25% of people haven't even bothered to check whether they can save money. So as part of our, one of the aspects of our housing strategy is to help people cut their costs. And the problem with switching energy is one of confusion and one of not knowing who to trust. And the beautiful thing from Tom's perspective is that there are no cost implications to this scheme. And if we succeed in doing it, it not only would reduce would result in quite significant savings for everybody who takes part, but it also gives us, as paragraph 8 says, the opportunity to promote energy efficiency within the borough, and indeed if it's done on a Leicestershire basis across the county. So on that basis, I would like to commend this scheme to Cabinet.
Thank you. We have started to do some market testing, and we've been looking at schemes where the council can be the champion, because obviously what we're doing there is promoting and enabling residents to save energies on their to make savings on their energy bills and help to reduce the number of people in households in fuel poverty and linking into energy efficiency. And we have come across a scheme that we're looking at that 160 other local authorities are looking at, so we're going to carry on progressing that. This is the only scheme, and I won't name it till we've finished the market research, but in relation to this scheme, this is the only one where the local authority can actually be a champion that I've managed to identify. We have looked at some others where the council can't be, but obviously I won't name those because we've still got to finalise the market research. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm a huge fan of switching within energy bills, having forced myself to actually do it for the first time, I think probably about 10 years ago when I moved into my current home, and every single year when the contract comes up, I switch again using various apps and various other bits and pieces that are sort of available. And in the last 10 years, my monthly charges for gas and electric haven't risen a single penny, despite the fact that the overall market has actually changed quite significantly. So it does prove Councillor Mercer's point about effective switching can actually save residents a huge amount of money. So it's certainly, as a proposition, I think it's very, very welcome. I think the biggest barrier, and again, between you and Councillor Mercer, quite clearly this is something you've probably talked about, is often people who feel nervous about how complicated it might be, maybe don't appreciate that once the core information is obtained, it's actually very straightforward. The process has been made incredibly easy for people now because of government initiatives to actually force the hard work effectively onto the suppliers rather than necessarily onto the residents. But they just need a bit of confidence, and hopefully we as an organisation can provide that confidence that actually this is doable and actually will save them significant amounts of money. It is horrific how many suppliers, both in the energy market but also telecoms and elsewhere, rely on people not switching at the end of their contracts, and how much extra people are paying as a result of that in action. So anything we can do to encourage people to actually look at their provision or the service providers, I think, is incredibly welcome. So with that, I'm going to ask any other questions or any other statements. So I can see Councillor Taylor followed by Councillor Siminovich, and I can hear somebody's phone going off as well. Councillor Taylor.
No.
Oh, actually, it's Alison's. Never mind. Don't worry. You're out. Councillor Taylor. Oh, sorry.
Is there any, I mean, obviously we haven't got the actual scheme here, but if residents do switch and they don't save money, is there any fallback from that?
I think with the scheme, with the community support scheme, what they're doing is helping provide advice and support to residents to register with the scheme. And when they register, they start to look at the tariffs that are out there and the providers. And they don't have to change, so they can go through those discussions with the supplier to discuss who would be the best alternative provider. And obviously, I think with any scheme that you enter, there's a what do you call it, where you can pull out.
Cool downs
period. So it would be dependent on what the provider's put in, and that could have, I suppose, some implication into relation to the reduced cost for maybe a shorter period of time. So we will look at that as part of the process to make sure that people don't enter into something that they then can't get out of.
Alison,
Do you know whether the smart meters, that I've got a smart meter, would it still work, for example? I don't know. I haven't decided whether it's beneficial or not yet.
Again, another basic question for me, I'm afraid. Would this be cheaper than just sort of going through Compare the Market or something like that, or is this just for council tenants or what?
It's for all residents of the borough, and it's really for us to help to promote the fact that people can make the changes, and those that haven't got the confidence to do it can come through the supply that we provide, and they will help give a help and advice rather than just this is what you've got, off you go. The companies will assist and talk things through and make sure people are getting the right package.
I see you. So if I was one of the people that wasn't confident for whatever reason doing the Compare the Market or equivalent, I can come to this company and go, they're there to help me and advise me and say, this is the recommended supplier. And then they will effectively compare the market themselves and come back and go, now we've got a different company and so forth. Is that basically the deal? And then I could just stay with them for enjoy the ride, basically.
They would go through the list of providers that they've linked up to, because they obviously go out three times a year into obviously buy their energy or their supplier, and they would come up with the number of suppliers that there are and then the options, and then they'd work them through with you, because obviously there's going to be a cheaper one to a dearer one, but what it might be is that you're signing up for a longer period of time. So that'll be the discussion they'll have with the residents, so that they fully understand what they're taking on and the implications of what they're taking on. Because as you've mentioned, a 12-month change, again, if you're taking on something for 18 months but it might be cheaper, is that beneficial? Because in 12 months' time it could have reduced further.
Thank you. My concern is about the elderly in Loughborough and the borough itself. And obviously a lot of them aren't on computers or have smartphones, etc. Can you assure me that you'll communicate with them in a manner that they understand, you know, with letters or whatever? Because it shouldn't just be available to people who can get online.
Yeah, if obviously if you approve this and we take this forward, and then when we've got somebody, we would do leaflet drops, etc. So we would look at what other mail shots, obviously to avoid paper, but over increased costs in mail. But where we're doing mail shots, we would include them in that. It's like, for instance, with a star survey or the results that go out to tenants, their newsletter, we could include it in there. We could include it in the Charnwood News. So it's promoting it through those ways as well, where the leaflets will drop through people's doors.
Because I know in my ward, the Wolds, at least a third of them are elderly, and I just want to be reassured they will probably be the most nervous and lack of confidence, so they will need their hands held that bit more.
And we'd promote it through libraries, parish councils, halls, etc.
I'll repeat at this point my favourite stat, which is the biggest buyers of iPads are actually the over 65s.
The presents for the kids, aren't they?
Well, who knows? Can I? I was very generous. I will dig out that fact, because I it's one of our favourite facts. But we'll find out whether it is actually a fact. Can I just ask? Actually, it's a straw poll, because it's always interesting, and actually everyone in the room. Can I ask who consistently changes their energy suppliers through comparing markets?
You get a price on.
Okay. So it's not everyone, but actually it's a lot of people. And I think that's actually, I mean, genuinely, that is actually quite interesting, because actually it's, you know, often in the market it's projected as being actually something that very few people want to do. And clearly we're slightly probably more switched on a segment of the population than others. But I think anyone around this room is an ambassador for this type of scheme. Actually, it's good to actually go out there and say, I've done this, and actually it works, don't be worried. So I think that's actually quite helpful. So thank you very much for that.
Can I just ask another question?
Sorry, quick question,
Carol. Does this sort of cover dual energy, though, as well?
Yes.
So I didn't know if there was, yes, gas, and I didn't know whether it was an extra discount.
Yeah, well, there could be. It depends on the providers, obviously.
Last question, Councillor Boker.
Yes. Could you just check what sort of contract we've got here at the council, because it's freezing in here tonight.
This is how Councillor Vardy gets his lower CO2 outputs each year. So can I just say it is about minus two outside at the moment, so it's probably not surprising that it's a little bit chilly in this extraordinarily cavernous room with only a few bodies inside. Are there any more questions? Because otherwise Councillor Boker is going to slip into hypothermia. So Councillor Mercer, can I ask you to make the recommendations, and then Councillor Smidovic, if I can ask you to second.
Thank you, Leader. I would like to recommend that Cabinet approve participation in a collective switching scheme, and that the Council go to the market to procure a suitable provider. And the reason for that is to assist residents in the borough to switch energy suppliers to achieve lower fuel tariffs through the collective switching scheme.
And as long as I can be the first applicant, I'd like to second this proposal.
As long as you do it online by yourself, Margaret. Right. So with that, can I ask everyone to vote on this? Are those all in favour? That's absolutely everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Alison. Thank you very much for all of those others in the room. And good night.